Welcome and thanks for coming to this Greater IBM webcast. Greater IBM Connection is IBM's worldwide business and social networking platform for former and current IBM employees. It's the Greater IBM alumni who make this community of about 90,000 members more vibrant and useful to all of us. Enjoy the webinar.
Welcome and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode until the question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question at that time, please press star 1 on your touch-tone phone and please clearly record your name when prompted. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. And I'd like to go ahead and turn the call over to your host, Ms. Jane Scandura. You may begin.
Thank you, Jose. Good afternoon and good evening and happy Wednesday to everybody. Welcome to this live event for the Greater IBM Connection, which is the social and business network for current and former IBMers. Very pleased that today's event is on the business of water, a thirst for smarter management. My name is Jane Scandura, and I'm your Greater IBM host for today. I'm a former IBMer and worked in various marketing management roles from 1995 to 2006. And I've also been a member and a huge fan of the Greater IBM since its inception, just before I left IBM. I'm also a boomerang, which I understand is a new term. I just learned that people that come back to IBM and work in different capacities. I'm currently on contract with the Greater IBM doing some marketing with them. So I'm kind of an IBM example of once an IBMer, always an IBMer. And I'm very pleased to be working on this initiative. Before we get started, just want to make sure if you're not registered in the Greater IBM community site, please do so at greateribm.com. If you are a current IBMer, you must register with your IBM email. And once you do register at the community site, please make sure you fill out your profile as completely as you can. It enables the Greater IBM team to target content that specifically interests you as well as helps other friends that you have, either current or former IBMers, to find you more easily. For this event, you need to join both the audio and the web conference. So if you haven't done so already, please dial into the audio portion. If you're on the web, you should be looking at a slide that says before we get started. And if you don't dial into the audio, you won't hear us.
Jane, excuse me. We have a few members who are asking about the numbers. We cannot tell them the specific numbers. They need to go back to the Greater IBM Connection community site and check the specific number for the country they're calling in from.
Okay.
There's over 50 numbers. Sorry.
Thank you. So once you all log in to ask any questions, we're going to have questions at the end of the session. You press star 1 for the operator, or you can also raise your hand in the upper left-hand portion of the window online. And then we'll be able to get to your questions. And just as Jose had mentioned, today's session is being recorded, so that includes any audience comments and questions. So if you do not want to participate, then please disconnect right now. Today's topic, I'm very excited about this topic. It's the business of water, a thirst for smarter management. And it's basically the future of world's resource for water is changing in an unprecedented ways. Immigration, population growth, and climate change are affecting the way we all think about our relationship with the world's water supply. Over the course of 2008, IBM's Global Innovation Outlook explored this topic, and in this webinar, we'll learn about those findings of the Global Innovation Outlook, or GIO, and we can consider ways that we can all be smarter about how we use and benefit water. And during your registration, we asked you a couple of questions. And one was like, you know, what's the largest issue that you think is the reason for us to be able to having trouble with our water supply? And 48% of you said access to clean drinking water was the largest issue. And right behind that, 31% said population growth strain on resources. So it was really interesting to get your feedback on that. And also, I'm really glad to hear that 67% of you also said that it's extremely important, this issue, to your business and your organization. So with that, I'm very pleased to introduce Dr. Sharon Noon, and she was our speaker for today's event. And she is IBM Vice President of Big Green Innovations. And the Big Green Innovations organization was commissioned by IBM's chairman in November 2006 with the mission to launch new businesses for IBM and information technology expertise and materials and processing expertise to solve critical problems around environmental issues. For the past 2 years, Sharon has led a worldwide team of IT and domain experts who are developing solutions in carbon management. I don't know how to even say this one. Photo what, Sharon?
Photovoltaics
and water management. I also had the pleasure of working with Sharon a few years ago when she was one of the executive leaders in IBM's life sciences business unit. So I was thrilled when she agreed to share her knowledge and expertise on this very important topic on how we need to be smarter about water. So without further ado, I would like to transfer the floor over to Ms. Sharon Nunes.
Thank you, Jane, and thank you, everybody, for joining. This has become quite a passion of mine over the last couple of years since I was first asked to lead this area, and it's quite amazing that most of the questions that I get these days on IBM being in this are questions related to, you know, why is IBM doing this, and why is a company like IBM interested in, you know, the natural resources such as water and, you know, some of the carbon areas that we've been involved in too from a carbon management perspective. And hopefully, once I bring you through some of the challenges that we've seen today, what we have learned from the Global Innovation Outlook, as well as what we've learned from our own research and conversations with academics, we're talking to a number of universities around the world, thought leaders, non-government organizations, government leaders, business leaders, analysts, you name it, we've probably talked to them, because in the first year, we really tried to understand what were the issues around water as a finite resource on the earth, and was there really an opportunity for information technologies to help better manage the world's water systems? As Jane mentioned, one of the areas that we explored last year is what we call in IBM the Global Innovation Outlook. Many of you may have heard about it, may have seen it, and I'm going to cover some of that material, some of the findings from that, as well as some of what we have found in the discussions over the last couple of years with, you know, with clients, with business partners, with analysts, everyone that I mentioned previously. And I'm going to highlight some of the ways that we think information technology can really help the world get a better handle on the water systems and some of the challenges that we have today and why we think information technology can play a critical role. I guess the good news, you know, from one of these emerging business areas in IBM, the good news is that when we actually talk about how we think information technology can help to solve some of these problems, nobody has yet kicked us out of their office. Most of the time they embrace us and say we desperately need an information technology company to help us with many of these challenges. And hopefully, if you don't know a lot about water and some of the challenges around the globe today, maybe by the end of this talk you'll be a little bit more informed and you'll actually understand how information technology really can play an important role. And I would expect we'll have time for some questions afterwards. So on page 2, let me just highlight a few of the things that we found through the Global Innovation Outlook study. Very interesting, tidbits, you know, factoids, around water that is used in producing products, producing services. And if you stop to think about what Jane mentioned earlier, the growth in the world's population, the demand that puts on our natural resources, on our man-made resources, then you start to understand why some people are calling water the 21st century's oil, and understanding why many people, including some of the heads of the United Nations, are predicting that wars will be fought over water this century, the way that wars have been fought over oil in the last century. And if you stop to think about the goods that we produce, the amount of water that it takes to actually feed animals and to produce the food that we eat, and thinking about the world population increasing by 50%, the amount of water that's used in producing a lot of these goods is going to put an increased strain on the water systems of the future. And so on the third page, I just want to highlight some of the specific issues that we are dealing with here. You know, so, for example, if you talk about the use of water on a per capita basis, six times the water usage since about a century ago, which is twice the rate of the population growth. And that is really because as the population moves more and more into a middle-class population, which is what we're seeing now in a lot of the emerging geographies, in India, in China, in Africa, in many South American countries, they eat more food that requires significant amount of water. They improve their diet to mostly grain, to mostly meat. And they also tend to use a lot more appliances because that is a sign of middle class, and they will use appliances that may use a lot more water. And that statistic is actually going to continue to increase if we do reach the population growth, which is what's indicated on the lower left of the page. So the increase of population drives an increase in all of our resources, not just water, but specifically water is what we're interested in here. And if you stop to think about today, the amount of water that we have in the U.S. primarily, we typically don't think about water shortages. We don't think anything about water not being there when we turn on the tap. I live in the Northeast. I've lived in the Northeast my whole life practically, and water is just always there, like electricity when you turn on the tap. But in many areas, even in the U.S. now, in the southeastern part of the U.S. and the southwestern part of the U.S., we're seeing massive droughts and massive water restrictions and a concern about water availability, both for crops, which is an important part of the economic stability of some of the states in the U.S., as well as just for drinking and for business use in many of the states. So there's an incredible linkage between the economic viability of locations and the amount of water that they have to support the local businesses and people. I read a great quote, I think it might have been in a report from the World Council for Sustainable Business Development, a quote that said, "Thirsty cities cannot grow." And if you think about it, the amount of water that a business needs to operate, think of a manufacturing facility that might be making food or beverages, think about a semiconductor manufacturing facility, think about steel and oil, even an electrical utility that typically requires a significant amount of water for cooling. If the water is not available for cooling, they have to downgrade their electrical output. So all kinds of issues related to economics and the economic viability of certain areas with respect to how much water they have available to them. Another interesting tidbit that we learned is that in many parts of the world, not just in the U.S., but in many European countries as well, in many older cities, the infrastructure is typically between 50 and 100 years old and leaks to the amount of often ranging from 30% to 50%. So in many U.S. cities, 30% is not uncommon. And that is water that is typically processed by a utility. So they pay for the cost of purchasing the water from a wholesaler. They pay for the cost of treating the water and distributing the water. But it is water that is never paid for because it never reaches its final destination, most often due to leakage in the pipes, sometimes due to theft, but most often due to leakage. So there's an actual euphemism for that. It's called non-revenue water. And when we talk to municipalities, most of them know exactly how much money it costs them every day, and it is not insignificant. So huge issues with the infrastructure of water as well. And just some additional statistics on what we've seen from reports by the United Nations and other organizations that there are expected to be significant changes in climate, which is going to impact additional people in the Middle East, Sub-Sahara, South America, Central America, and Asia over the next 30 to 40 years. So significant challenges going forward, and one of the ways we think we can help to manage the water supplies that are available today is by using information technology for measuring and monitoring what's going on in the water system so that hopefully you can better manage it. So the chart that talks about water management as an urgent and complex global issue. On the top right there, you'll see a chart of the water stress around the world. This is the countries, most of the countries that I just mentioned there, and some of the changes that we're seeing in population as many more people are moving to coastal areas. Of course, this is an issue that's also related to climate change, related to saltwater ingress into freshwater supplies. I'm not going to talk specifically about that, but there is a lot of complexity in dealing with water systems, and really being able to understand all of the impact beyond what I talked about previously with the economic impact. I do want to just highlight issue of, which I believe I might have a chart on and further down in the deck, there is an intricate dependency of water and energy. I mentioned the amount of water. I don't think I mentioned the amount of water that is typically used in the United States for producing electricity. It's about 40% of the surface water in the U.S. is used for cooling needs for typically coal plants or nuclear plants in the U.S. or for hydropower generation. And in the U.S., on the converse side, the amount of electricity that is used to pump water from one place to another or to treat water, you know, chemically to process water, is about 4% of the U.S. electricity supply. In California, however, that number is actually almost 20% of the energy for the state of California, because they have a massive challenge of moving water from the north of California to the south of California, because most of the water is in the north, and it has to go over the Tehachapi Mountains. So you can imagine the energy required to pump the water over there. So this interdependency of water and oil, I mean water and electricity generation, is coming to the forefront of Congress. A number of bills are actually being introduced to Congress now to look at energy and water, not as individual components, but to look at these as two interdependent systems. And that is certainly one of the areas where we think information technology can provide some additional value to really helping to understand those two systems and the dependencies. One of the interesting things that we found in talking to a number of water managers around the world is that very often information, there's a lot of data about water that exists, but it is just data. It is not information, and it's not knowledge about what's going on in the water system. It is typically fragmented. It is in people's desktops. It's often on a piece of paper. Sometimes the information is shared by telephone. We actually had one water utility that said when they see a problem, they just pick up the phone and call the guys downstream and say, keep an eye out for the next couple days because you might see this, which is what we're seeing today in our water system, rather than having automatic alerts or triggers that might cause you to take some action, you know, if there's a problem. And so we see that there's a huge opportunity to better integrate the information that is available to try and bring together multiple stakeholders, encourage them to share information so that we can start to look at water on a watershed basis, not as one slice of the information based on my own personal interest or your own company's interest. Really important to start sharing information about the water as a resource, as a watershed region. So I want to talk a little bit as a brief introduction there that hopefully piques your interest around some of the issues. IBM used its Global Innovation Program last fall to host about 8 different brainstorming sessions around the world in all of the major geographies with business partners, with clients, with academics, thought leaders around the world, entrepreneurs, to really try to pose some critical questions about water and what maybe could be done to try and tackle some of these problems. So for those of you who aren't familiar with the Global Innovation Outlook, this is a program that IBM has been doing for about 5 years now. We've been hosting it typically once or twice a year on different topics. So initially you'll see a list on the page that's up on your web system now that shows you some of the previous topics that we've covered, healthcare, government, transportation, media, a session about 2 years ago on Africa as an emerging economy. And the one that we did, that we hosted last year, I was one of the executive sponsors for it, was around oceans and waters. So we have typically, over the course of 5 years, brought together over 750 different influencers from a number of countries to really have some thought-provoking conversation around these various topics. And I want to summarize just on a few charts some of what we found and some of the problems that we put forward in the Oceans and Waters Global Innovation Outlook. So I've indicated, hopefully you're all aware, the water is tightly linked to food and energy production. I talked about some of the statistics around energy production, but on a global basis, water is actually used about 70% of the water that is used is for food production, about 70% for agricultural production on a global basis. In the U.S., it's a little bit less than that. I believe it's maybe something like 50 to 60%. In some of the more advanced industrial economies, it's a lot less. It might be down to 30 or 40%, and the industrial use of water would be a much higher percent. So we typically look at the use of water on three massive, three major areas: agricultural use, industrial use, and then sort of business and personal use. And so those numbers on a global basis are often reported as 70% for agriculture, 20% for industrial, and about 10% for other. Now, again, I talked about some of the food and the growth of manufacturing economies and how dependent those are on water, water availability. But again, if you start to think about water, if you remember back to the first couple charts that showed the amount of water to produce various goods, it's a critical part of just about every supply chain around the globe. And of course, when you are producing goods, you're often moving water from one location to another. If you think about the water that it takes to produce a good that may be created in China, for example, and shipped to Europe or the U.S. for consumption. So there are some very interesting non-stated issues around water and where it might make sense to produce various goods. Those are discussions that are going on in various water organizations around the world. The implications around climate change because of the ocean and how much CO2, how much carbon dioxide the ocean can capture, the implications of that close linkage with energy and water, and whether as you're looking for additional water supplies underground, whether you're having to retrieve water. I know in many of the emerging geographies, they're going very deep. They're going a few thousand kilometers often into the ground to tap into water systems, the very deep underground aquifers. That takes a huge amount of energy, of course, and the more energy that's used, the more impact on the global climate change. So, again, just this intricate web of interdependencies with all of the issues around climate change. So we highlighted for the day that we spent on this conversation, some of the issues around food, around alternate energy sources, and whether that would lessen the impact or the requirement on water, whether there were alternative ways to think about water being used in agricultural systems, how technology might help to tackle some of these issues. From the ocean perspective, do we look at the ocean as a resource of fresh water and desalination, and what are the issues around that technology? We also looked at whether there would be some alternative medicines that could be captured from the ocean, and certainly energy sources such as wave height or currents that are often used in tidal currents that might be used in some of the coastal areas to try to capture alternative energy forms based on the ocean, as an energy source, as a food source, and possibly a pharmaceutical source. So some very provocative discussions. I believe that in one of the charts here, I have a link to the Global Innovation Report, and if you haven't seen it, I'd encourage you to download the PDF and take a look at it, and or maybe not download it, but just read it on the screen and save some trees, but whichever is appropriate. So again, the focus really here was, with this collective group that was brainstorming, what could we do to possibly come up with some pilot solutions that might help us to see how technology could help to solve some of the problems. Food, energy, and water, I've mentioned this close linkage here and the interdependencies. One of the hot topics in water management now is to really look at water as an integrated system. And this is not just related to the energy water situations that I've been talking about, but also looking at the impact of water. And there's a new discipline that's called ecosystem services. And looking at the value of water in tourism, for example. So how do you put a monetary value on having the Everglades in Florida, for example, as a tourist attraction? And what happens if the water there dries up and it doesn't, attract the tourists? There is a monetary value around that, or just having a water supply that is full of fresh fish so it attracts people for tourism. And there are some university groups that are starting to look at this ecosystem services discipline and try to monetize the value for water as part of a larger ecosystem. So this whole integrated resource management area is getting to be very, very interesting and, of course, involves some modeling and some understanding of the natural resources as well as the interplay of the natural resources with the man-made resources around it. And, you know, I mentioned the desalination. I just want to highlight one of the areas that is becoming more and more popular in the Middle East in many areas that are water-stressed right now, the coastal areas. They're actually implementing desalination systems. I know in Orange County, California, they just got approval for a desalination system there. And, you know, this is, of course, in Southern California where there is a huge water challenge, and the water is typically coming from the north of California. But if they can provide their own water, they feel they can be more self-sufficient and they could have a lower cost for it. However, as I mentioned earlier, you know, desalination has a very high energy cost associated with it. And there are implications, again, if you think about it in the context of the larger ecosystem and not thinking about water and the water processes itself. One of the topics that hit the news last year was when the U.S. Congress decided to encourage the growth of corn for ethanol and, you know, to look at alternative fuels when the gas prices were so high in the U.S. last year. There was a huge outrage from many constituents around the globe because of the significant impact on food supplies and also the amount of water that was required to grow the corn. So the farmers were subsidized for growing the corn, really incented to grow it. It doesn't have a great conversion rate, you know, energy conversion rate from the biofuels perspective. There are a lot of alternatives, but it did have an impact on the water usage in the area and, of course, on the food prices. So again, not looking at water as part of a larger ecosystem and understanding these interdependencies causes problems, you know, somewhere else down the food chain, if I can, you know, use that quote. So part of what we believe has to happen as we go forward and start to understand water and the many issues around water is, you know, from an information technology perspective, how do we link these systems together? How do you model, in some cases, those systems and the interdependencies amongst them? And again, think about areas where we are starting to see populations shifting into cities, especially in some of the emerging geographies, and the fact that, you know, in China they're building new cities at an incredibly fast rate. The stress that this is putting on the electrical and the water demands in that city is something that they have to look at in a holistic manner, especially since they have water challenges across the whole country to begin with. So again, thinking about water as an integrated resource management challenge, what role can information technology play there? Just some of the things that we came up with and some of the challenges that I wanted to highlight out of the Global Innovation Outlook is, you know, what we have to think about is when we interact with water, we change it. We redirect it or we somehow alter its state. So you can think about this from the perspective of desalination, taking in salt water, creating fresh water out of it, and having to dispose of the brine somehow that's the leftover. But we're absolutely changing that water and drawing on the energy resources. If you think about the water that is used from cooling, from the energy creation resources, so think of a coal plant or a nuclear plant that takes in water from a local stream or river, and uses it for cooling, you know, there are very strict government regulations on how, you know, what state the water can be when it goes back into the system, but very often it's warmer when it goes back in when it comes out, and there is an impact. It might be slight, but there is sometimes an impact to the local water system. In some cases, in 2006 in the Tennessee Valley and in France, some of the nuclear plants had to downgrade their electrical output because they did not have sufficient water available for cooling. And therefore, they couldn't take in the water that was typically required for cooling because if they put it back in, it would exceed the temperature limits. Right? So if the water's not there to begin with, it's a whole separate issue about how you manage it as a resource. I think, you know, for the feeling with most of the people who participated in the Global Innovation Outlook was that there is a lot of information that individuals have collected, that academics have collected, that companies are collecting on their water systems, on their local systems, that's being used only for their needs. So if there's a way to share that information, it could actually help to advance some knowledge about the local water systems and, you know, how well they're, how sustainable they are, how well they're managing today. And I think that the overall critical feeling was that, you know, there's a lot that we still don't know about water systems. We've tended to ignore them for a very long time. And a big, large part of the discussion had to do with the price of water and the fact that water is not priced to make people value it in the way that other resources are. So it was a very provocative discussion all around. And I believe on the next page is just some additional information on the Global Innovation Outlook. Very thought-provoking. I'd encourage you to, again, take a look at it, contribute to the, I believe it's both on Facebook and LinkedIn. There is some information on the conversation around it, so join in the conversation there as well. So I want to talk about the water in the context of the Smarter Planet activities that IBM has underway, and just give you a little bit more information on what we're doing in IBM in the context of how the information technology systems that we're developing can help. And if you've seen the Smarter Planet media ads, television ads, there are typically three themes around it. It is instrumented, meaning that more and more systems are interconnected. They have sensors on them, and we can see what's happening on the pretty much on a day-to-day basis and sometimes on a real-time basis. More and more, all of these systems are interconnected. You know, they're connected to each other. They're connected to people. And you can just think about the iPhone as a great example of that. And as we start to connect these systems, we have the ability to start looking at patterns and start to look at the data that is coming out of them and to start to analyze those patterns and look at how we can make the systems more intelligent. Once they're connected, once we have the software to manage them better, we can really start to look at the intelligence around them. And we're applying this to water and trying to create more intelligent water systems. So as I mentioned before when I was talking about the Global Innovation Outlook, can we provide information on drought and tendencies and the potential impacts around climate change, which might include some models, it might include integrating the information so that better decisions can be made, better business decisions can be made, possibly even about where you might locate businesses in the future. Can we start to convince businesses that water management needs to be an important part of how they manage their resources going forward? So again, don't think about water as a commodity, but think about it as a precious resource and the cost that it is taking you as an organization to use water and to treat water and to process water and to dispose of water as part of your business operations. And, you know, the critical area, of course, is can we add some intelligence to water systems as we build new infrastructure? As I mentioned earlier, the infrastructure that is leaking significantly is going to be replaced probably within the next decade in many parts of the world. Can we make that a little bit more intelligent that will help to better manage the water systems as we go forward? I mentioned earlier, I won't spend any time on the water energy carbon chart. I did mention earlier the interdependencies here. And, you know, again, just want to emphasize the fact that, you know, the more energy that's used to produce water or to, you know, process water, then the more impacts certainly on the carbon emissions. And, of course, carbon emissions contribute to climate change, which impacts where the water will often be. So from a climate change perspective, what we're seeing is that water in areas where it's probably already flooded or seeing significant rain, it will probably be more extreme in those areas. And in areas where there is drought, we expect that there will be more drought and larger drought areas around the world. So these are the predictions, the current predictions from climate change experts around the world, just that we will see more extremes that will exacerbate potentials for flooding and potential for drought. So some of the areas, again, that we have found through discussions over the last couple of years is, you know, delivering critical information to water managers so that they can make the right decisions about their system. The infrastructure, building and repairing the infrastructure with a smart system and smart management around it. And I've got a couple examples of what we're doing in the Netherlands in that specific area. And then, of course, I've talked previously about the integrated resource management issue. Collaboration, of course, with many of the stakeholders in water systems is going to be key. How do we take that data? How do we integrate it? How do we stand the how do we understand the individual components and really provide, we like to call it, one version of the truth for all of the users of the water system, so that I can actually understand what might be going on in, you know, my hometown, for example, around the water system, whether it has to do with data that comes from the local municipality or whether it's data that comes from the local businesses or that comes from my, you know, water system if I have a well. How do you provide all of that information? Three target areas that we're looking at in IBM, and we believe that these are valid segments that really need to get a handle on water as a water management system. Enterprises, which of course I've mentioned previously, you know, how plants might, you know, manufacturing plants would be using water and how they might want to better manage water as part of their business operations, which includes energy consumption as well and the materials they would use for purifying water, for example. Infrastructure management might have to do with wastewater management, leaky pipes, better managing those, identifying where leaks are and putting together proactive plans for managing those systems. Smart levees, where you could actually have an indication of the stability of a levee. And in the U.S., if for any of the, those of you who are on the Midwest region, you understand clearly the value of having a levee that you might be able to understand when it would fail or versus, you know, how long it might survive depending on the water levels associated with it. So we're doing some experiments in the Netherlands to put active sensors in levees to get a better understanding of the early warning capabilities of a smart system of levees. And then from a resource management perspective, looking at how we can help governments who want to monitor their water for bathing or for recreational capabilities as they serve their citizens. And, you know, of course, protecting their citizens against floods if that's one of the issues in that in local geographies. So some of the innovation areas that we're very focused on, I'm not going to read, you know, the charts in detail. You can certainly get a chance to look at those. They're posted on the website. The predictive analytics is one of the areas where we think there's a tremendous opportunity, as I mentioned before, with the interconnection and the intelligence that's being provided as these systems become more and more intelligent. What kind of patterns can you start to see, and how do you analyze those patterns and start to look at what might be expected in the future so that you can anticipate some of the challenges, you can take some proactive action against them. General information management, of course, which I've talked about. Open standards, we believe that to really be able to provide this integrated system that we have to have open standards, probably a services-oriented framework where you can integrate information from various constituents, different data formats, different forms. And really, as a business, think about how you need to transform the thinking about water as part of your business and part of your business operations. What is the, you know, true cost that you see for water as part of your business operations? There is an absolute cost that you pay when you purchase it and treat it, but there is also a lot of these hidden costs as part of other systems in your business operations that might not be as visible. Right? So a lot of opportunity there to provide information technology systems. We have a platform that we're calling our Strategic Water Information Management Platform. For those of you who are really good with acronyms, it's SWIM, Strategic Water Information Management Platform, and basically is a framework that allows you to do the analytics, that allows you to do the integration, that integrates with existing systems, because we know that there are plenty of integrated systems, SCADA systems, the control and data acquisition systems that are very common, already used, and you know, whatever system is going to be provided in the future has to fit with whatever exists today, obviously. This is the Strategic Water Information Management Platform. This is just a schematic to indicate to you the type of data and the type of impact assessments that we might, you know, be able to have here, what type of uses that some of the shareholders, stakeholders would be interested in having, you know, as a collective whole. The number of stakeholders in the upper right-hand corner that we see, and these are, you know, in one area in California, we've counted over 200 stakeholders for one of the watershed regions, so this is just a small example of all of the issues around water and water systems. But again, the view is really, and the intent here is, can we integrate this information and provide a higher level of value around the water system to the end users? We have a Green Sigma methodology that is focused on water management and carbon management, And this is really taking the Lean Sigma practice, identifying the key performance metrics, and integrating the Lean Sigma practice into a business, which calls for constant improvement and, you know, constant measurement against your objectives. And really, we're overlaying the environmental factors onto this Lean Sigma practice. So we've called it Green Sigma, and we have some very specific implementations that we've done internal to IBM around water and carbon. We have some great reports on our own Burlington plant where we've ended up saving about $3 million a year implementing the Green Sigma methodology. So some examples of what we've done in the water management area, where we hopefully can convince you that information technology is really, you know, playing a critical role here. In the project that we have going on with the Beacon Institute in New York, it's in our backyard here in the New York region. The implication here is that we will be able to real-time monitor what's going on in the river. It is a river and estuary, and the estuary has the constant change associated with it. It has a saltwater ingress that often travels 50 to 100 kilometers upriver. And we want to be able to monitor that salt front and understand what the implications are for the life of the river and understand the temperature fluctuations, the impact of storms and the fresh water that comes in from storms, et cetera, fishing, contamination that might be coming from point sources or that might be coming from runoff from people's lawns and the nitrogen fertilizers, et cetera. So, again, monitoring the whole Hudson River and understanding what's going on there real time as it implies, you know, and has an implication for the marine life in the river. In the Netherlands, we're working on this flood control project that I mentioned. The picture that you see there is actually the levee after it collapsed. That little dip there is, you know, with the, when the levee collapsed. So we have some early indication. We're doing some additional experiments this year. This was done at the end of last year. But again, to understand when some early warning capability could be provided to the government so that they could understand when they would have to evacuate people and how they could better protect people and property. In Galway Bay on the lower left, we have a joint project with the Marine Institute where we are actively monitoring what's going on in Galway Bay. And we're providing information to the harbor master. We're providing information to fishermen. We're providing information to some of the energy, alternative energy corporations that are looking at wave energy as a potential source of alternative power for Ireland. We're working with the aquafisheries, so we're providing information like the temperature and the pH of water, some of the real-time sensing information that's providing phosphate, information on phosphate, which is a potential, thought of as a contaminant for water because it influences the algae growth in the waters, which affects, you know, the quality of shellfish and fish in the area. So an integrated system that provides a lot of data, a lot of information to the multiple stakeholders. There are about 20 stakeholders in that project there. And then, as I mentioned, in IBM Burlington, we've got some terrific information on how we have taken our methods and tools and implemented efficiencies in water and energy savings in our own organization. We're working with the Nature Conservancy to put together a system that helps you to monitor compliance. This is specifically a program that's being done in Brazil, helping them, the scientists there, to monitor compliance with the forestry code and keeping the local vegetation compliant for water quality and, you know, looking at the runoff, different soil models and, percolation models that we've worked with the scientists there to understand the water quality and how it's affected by the local ground cover. In Malta, we're working with the Energy and Utilities Group in Malta and putting in smart energy meters and smart water meters throughout the whole country and integrating those. So this is a great example of how we will have our first example of the integrated energy and water systems. And smart weather management, integrating information on weather and into business operations and understanding how weather might impact things like transportation or resource management. We have implemented two centers for water management on a global basis in the Netherlands and in Ireland, and this is where a lot of the initial work that I mentioned has been done. And I think this might be the end of the presentation. This is basically some additional reports and information that you can get from the web, information on the water management program, and also as a part of the larger Smarter Planet initiative. The GIO report is on there as well, and a summary of some questionnaires that we had around business and government leaders regarding water management pain points last fall. So hopefully this provides you with some food for thought and encourages you to pursue information on water and how technology can help to solve some of these problems somewhere in the future.
Thank you, Sharon. You know, if you haven't on the phone, if you have not read the GIO report on water and oceans, it is absolutely well worth your time. And the entire website on the GIO is amazing, and which is what prompted me to ask Sharon to come and talk to you guys today. We'd like to have some questions.
Hi, Sharon. This is Matt Gobin. Question for you. I have Indiana public sector in my territory, which includes both the state of Indiana and the city of Indianapolis. And I guess I'm curious, typically at the city level, who are the people that care about that? I mean, I would think it would be about these issues. I would think it would be Department of Public Works or something like that, but I'm just kind of interested in what role within the state or within a city we would typically target.
Mm-hmm. So I'm actually working with one of the GBS counterparts in Indiana, or actually across the state. It's often water municipalities, so there it would be typically the I mean, sometimes we see it's the Public Works Department, and, you know, the water groups are often hidden in different organizations. Sometimes it's Public Works, sometimes it's a specific water department if the city is large enough. Sometimes it's under environmental protection. So I've got a list of kind of Q&A. If you want to drop me an email, I've got a list of some of the Q&A that relates to that and how you might address some of the offerings that we're working on to different segments and why they might care about it and what some of the key talking points are, you know, what some of the, you know, this non-revenue water, for example, you know, why it's important to them and how we can tackle some of that.
Okay, great. I'll send you a note. Thanks.
Any more questions?
There are no other questions on the phone line at this time.
Okay. Do you see have a chat? Okay. Well, thank you very much, everyone, for participating, and thank you, Sharon, and have a great day.
We did have a question queue up at this time. Should we go ahead and take it?
We do have a call.
Hang on.
You have a question in the chat room from Benny Kroningold.
Which is? Flora, you got that question? I don't see it.
No, he just raised his hand. I think he has a question. Benny Kroningold.
And we did have a question queue up on the phone line.
Okay. You can take the question on the phone until we...
We do have a question from Debbie Kennedy. Your line is open.
Hello, Sharon and Jane and Flora. Nice to have this wonderful presentation. My question is, when you are talking to all of us as greater IBMers in different parts of the world and doing in different businesses, many of us, what is the best way that we can support this initiative that you're doing with water?
Well, I think, first of all, one of the things that you'll see in the GIO report is education is desperately needed for not just businesses, but the general public, the lay population, businesses, and government leaders to help them to understand what some of the key issues are around water. I think, you know, I've been at this for almost 3 years now, and I was absolutely astounded when I started to learn all the critical issues around water as really a limited resource around the world. I mean, it's, technically we have the same amount of water that we had for millennium around, but the changes in population, the changes in demand in, you know, food and agricultural needs and growing beef and pork and chicken, all of the meats that we eat and, you know, the grains. I mean, when you start to look at all of the problems, I think that you start to think very differently about water and water usage and why it's important to better manage it. So I would just encourage people to learn as much as you can about water, water systems, what some of the challenges are, what some of the issues are, and, you know, really start to have the conversation with people so that they start to think about water in a different way. If you think about this as an analogy to what's happened in the carbon management issue of that topic over the last 3 or 4 years, when Al Gore started to talk about the inconvenient truth and carbon emissions, suddenly the world started to think about carbon and carbon emissions in a very different way. That's what needs to happen with water over the next couple of years. And the more people who actually understand what some of the challenges are and can talk intelligently about why technology can answer not all of the problems, but many of the problems and help to solve some of the problems, then I think, you know, the better off we'll be at really accelerating how we can better manage the systems before it really, you know, gets to the point that is predicted today. You know, I think we can avoid that if we start to proactively manage the systems better than we have been.
I think your point on that idea of being able to all raise our consciousness, just imagine if you took all the people that are members of Greater IBM and we all just changed a little bit. My follow-on question to you is, since you've been involved in this, and I have to congratulate you on the beautiful report, the water report, as always, from Global Innovation Outlook. It's so wonderful. What, from your standpoint, how has this changed you?
My family gets tired of hearing me lecture about water these days.
Yes.
You know, friends and family come to visit, and you know, even though only a few percent of the water used on a global basis is for individuals, I think, you know, it's just common sense that collectively individuals can still make a huge difference. And if you start to be more conscious about the way that you use water at home, then I think that often can translate into what you do at work. You can start to drive changes in your work location as well. You know, whether it's IBM or whether it's another business, whether it's a business partner, you start to take, you know, personalize it. You start to do it not just when you're at home, but you do it in, you know, 24 hours a day. So, you know, I collect rainwater, for example, and use that for gardening. Why do we use fresh water for the toilet and for watering our lawn? You know, we're processing this water, and there's a cost to that that is totally hidden from most people. We're using it, you know, to water the lawn, to wash the car. Maybe you want somewhat clean water to wash the car. You don't want it scratched. You don't want, you know, to wash it with mud, obviously. But there are many cases where we use fresh water, you know, pure water, drinking quality water for, you know, process, for uses where you don't need that quality of water. And, you know, there's a lot of debate that's going on around that and how you can implement systems that would allow you for, you know, very active water use. But even things like collecting rainwater on a personal basis, you know, being more conscious about the water that you use, not leaving the water running. You know, a lot of people say, you know, when you're brushing your teeth, but it's the dishes, it's the teeth, it's the hand washing, it's doing a full load of dishes in the dishwasher. All of these add up, you know, just on a personal basis. And then I've noticed, I certainly start to, you know, be much more conscious of energy and water uses at work as well.
Thank you so much for what you're doing and for inspiring all of us.
Yeah, I have another question. I mean, this is one of the prompted me to ask Sharon is because we do need to educate people, I think, around the world on this. And there is a movie, I just found it on, it's For the Love of Water, Flow, and I haven't had an opportunity to see it yet.
I haven't watched it yet. Yep.
Curious to know about that because I am anxious to check that out. The trailer is amazing.
I've heard terrific.
So hopefully the mission is starting,
right,
that people will start to learn more about it and folks on this call can start talking about it and spreading the word as well.
Yep.
Do we have any more questions?
We do have a question from Benny Krummengold. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for the presentation. We have technology, desalination technology, that uses renewable energy. We found out that 26% of getting the water or cleaning the water, 26% of the cost is energy, and we found a way of zero energy. There are some energy involved in pumping it and moving it in.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wondered, it also eliminates the problem of salt on the shore.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if who is the person or group of person or department we can talk about this type of technology and if it's applicable to what IBM is doing.
Yep, we're really more information. More, if you've got some information, feel free to send it to me. IBM isn't doing work in desalination, but we're working with a number of business partners who have the desalination systems, and we're really looking at, you know, the energy associated with it and looking at how we monitor and manage whether it's the energy or the quality of water, the water coming in, the water going out for those systems. But I'd be happy to take a look at it and make the right connections if there's some key business partners or client opportunities.
All right. Thank you.
The next question comes from Bob Tevis. Your line is open.
Hi, Sharon. Thank you very much again for your presentation. The question I have relates to one of your slides. I think it was slide number 8, where you talked about this integrated resource management. from my perspective, that requires some sort of responsible party to look at things from a holistic sense. And I wanted to ask you if you're finding that difficult in the marketplace with different people managing different areas of resources.
Well, it's very easy to say. It's a great question. It's very easy to say. It's a lot harder to implement, as you can imagine, for all of the reasons that you mentioned. And we've got a number of stakeholders, but we are working with a number of water utilities who have jurisdiction over multiple areas. What they've asked us to do is to have the conversation with their stakeholders with them. And so they are hoping that we can help to influence. We are also having the conversation with a number of government organizations and trying to get insight from them on how they think, you know, information technology can be used to better manage it. There's no perfect answer yet. We're still in our infancy. But I think if there are one or two key players in the area, certainly that helps to, helps to mitigate, what you mentioned. There's no silver bullet yet. What we're hoping, of course, to provide is an information system that lets you make a decision based on the information and the data that's available versus emotion. I think, most people would recognize that water is a very emotional topic, that there's a lot of debate over whether this is a given right or whether it's, a human need and what the implications are between the two of those. There was a large debate on this at the World Water Forum in March, I believe it was in March in Istanbul. And, a lot of the debate is still going on, but just having this information and providing it so that, even multiple users get the same information to make a decision, I think, is part of what we hope to accomplish. Whether there's one person who ends up eventually having this jurisdiction over it or not, I think is still, a large question that looms in the future.
So you look at yourself as an integrated party, bringing everybody together? Is that?
Yes.
Gotcha.
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much.
Sure.
The next question comes from Peter Vickers. Your line is open.
Hello, Shannon. Great presentation, and I was glad to hear you make that comment about the fact that there were 386 million trillion gallons at the start of the world, and that today is 386 million trillion gallons in the world today. We just put 6 billion people in the middle of it. But the issue that I wanted to actually put on the table is this concept which is being used in the term of virtual water.
Yes.
The fact that, strawberries are grown in water-stressed areas like Mexico and then shipped full of water to the northeast for us to participate in great strawberries in the middle and height of winter.
Yes.
How do we capture that virtual water and that water movement?
Yep.
Because I think there's an enormous complex issue in that.
Oh, that's a great question. And one of the biggest challenges, so this topic came up again at the Global Innovation Outlook. There is an organization that came out of the Netherlands, I think maybe somewhere in Western Europe, that is actually looking at virtual water and trying to look at how you can collect information on virtual water and water in the supply chain, for example, is another way to think about this. There are a lot of people who feel very strongly that we should only grow crops in areas where it makes sense to grow crops, that you should align the crops. And there was one comment on one of my charts about this is one of the discussion points at the Global Innovation Outlook, is that we should grow crops in areas where the climate and the water availability is suitable. I read with interest when I first moved into this area a few years ago that the largest export from Israel is water, and it's embedded in a lot of the fruits and vegetables. And Israel is in a water-stressed area, as you probably know. Yet, they have implemented water technologies to really, very, very focused on conservation and reuse and capture of water. So, they've been able to manage, but they're also a little bit smaller country than someone like the U.S. or Mexico. So it's a great question, and I think that debate will go on. I don't have a lot of confidence that there's going to be any easy answer to that one, partly because it goes back to the economic development. So you've got to, ensure the government somehow is going to have to, get in the middle of this and ensure that if they take away one level of economic development, that there is a replacement, because then, of course, you're implying that you're going to remove those jobs from people who are depending on that as part of their economic growth. So, again, thinking about this as part of the holistic holistic system that we talk about is absolutely critical. Virtual water is I guess, becoming more and more of a topic of conversation. But, again, no easy answers. I think that, you know, this is a space that I would say watch it over the next 3 to 5 years, because the conversation now is just beginning around water the way that it was 3 or 4 years ago around the carbon issue. And
You're absolutely correct. You're absolutely correct. The only interesting one is I don't see it actually as the next oil, because basically energy we create from multiple different sources, wind, solar, gas, but water is water.
Right. There's not much alternative for that one.
No, thank you very much for a great presentation.
Thank you.
Hi, yes, I have a question. I have an environmental engineering background, so I'm kind of interested in the synchronicity here between what IBM is doing here. And most of the technology advancement have been the spurn of legislation, the Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act, and its amendments in the 70s and the repeal of those amendments, along globally with something like the Basel Convention that has propelled, just a lot of the good sense management that we're talking about here. What can we look forward to, or what is industry trying to impress or partner with the environmental engineering field to promote technological advancement in this area?
Great, great question again. So one of the areas, if you notice, you know, what we have done initially is we put these centers of excellence in Western Europe, in Netherlands and in Ireland, partly because, you know, there are coastal areas there, and partly because we see a tremendous pull in Europe because of the Water Framework Directive. You mentioned the Clean Water Act and the Basel Convention and a lot of the, you know, I guess, government intervention that has really driven a lot of the impact here that we've seen in, you know, the way that we change about water, the way how we measure it and monitor it. And what we are doing now is IBM is actually in conversation with most of the global, what I would call, physical infrastructure players who have very strong environmental engineering organizations. And, you know, we're working with them on how technology can play a more prominent role in the future in managing water resources. And I'll say that very broadly, whether it's enterprise or whether it's natural resources. And also, you know, our own organization inside IBM, our own corporate environmental affairs team, have been terrific partners with us and have, you know, given us tremendous insight on the various organizations and some of the non-government organizations that are very influential and, you know, how they think about water. So we belong to a number of them, and we have collaborations with the Nature Conservancy, as you saw in my charts, with the World Wildlife Federation, with the World Business Council for Sustainable Development. We work closely with the EPA on some of their energy savings initiatives. So, you know, we try to, you know, work with the influencers and the subject matter experts in the field, because we are not, as much as I've learned about water in the last couple of years, I am not a water expert by any means. And the value here for us is to work with environmental engineers, work with people who know hydrology, you know, water systems and the physical infrastructure, and merge our IT knowledge with their domain knowledge. That's really where I see the win. And so we're very actively looking at a number of these partners and have active conversations and projects with some of them.
Great. Thank you.
I just wanted to thank everybody again, and we'll be receiving a survey on the event, and we really would love your feedback, not only on this event, but whatever else you would like to see, any kind of topics that you'd be interested in having the Greater IBM present to you. We're always looking for improving and delivering insightful programs to the Greater IBM community, so we really look forward to your feedback, and thank you very much for participating.
We hope this webcast was helpful for you. Subscribe to our RSS feed for future presentations like this.